Monday, and hey, Betsy, we stopped by today, this snowy day in February, Sunday, February the 6th, to talk to you two a little bit about your past. I would like to start off by asking you, Mamie, to give me your full name and tell me how old you are.
Mamie Clarice Johnson, and I will be 83 in
the bank. And the other member of the Johnson family that we have here is my Aunt Betsy, and we'll start off by you with asking you your full name and when you were born.
Betsy J. Harrell.
Age?
Age is
72. 72. Now, Aunt Mamie, would you tell me, please, how many brothers and sisters you have, and maybe name them and give their age in the order in which they were born?
I have three sisters, half sisters, and four brothers. There's only two brothers living at this time. One of them is Lawrence E. Johnson. And he was born in...
Naturally, when we started this, we weren't fully prepared. So, since we have gotten out a family record, and I will fill in a little bit for the question I just asked Aunt Mamie. Her family, consisting of four girls and four boys, I noticed from the record, are in this order. Maud H. Johnson was born December the 14th, 1880. Mamie C. Johnson, born May the 11th, 1883. Riley S. Gore, born July the 9th, 1886. John W. Johnson, born November the 27th, 1888. Harry W. Johnson, born April the 7th, 1890. Oscar C. Johnson, born November the 10th, 1891. And Betsy J. Harrell, born May the 1st, 1893. And Lawrence E. Johnson, who is my father, born December the 31st, 1894. Now, the parents of these eight people was Father Henry L. Johnson, born July the 3rd, 1858, and his wife was Molly E. Shank, born July the 26th, 1857. I notice also from this record that Henry L. Johnson and Molly E. Shank tells me that her mother was known as Mary Elizabeth Shank, and they were born married on May the 11th, 1880. I think somewhere preceding in this tape, we've established today's date as being February the 6th, 1966, and of this family of eight children, there are four living today, Mamie Johnson, Mrs. Betsy Harrell, Oscar C. Johnson, lives in Zanesville, Ohio, and my father, Lawrence E. Johnson. And now, Aunt Mamie, I would like to ask you next if you remember anything about your grandparents and who they were.
Yes, I don't know my grandfather. He died before my father was married. But my grandmother lived with us for many years, until she died, and she was 87 when she died. And my grandmother and grandfather Shank died earlier, so I never knew much about them.
Well, what was your grandmother's name?
My grandmother? John. And my grandfather was Henry Johnson.
Now, let's see, I think we've talked about this family and a few of the people that are no longer living. Where were you born?
I was born in Rappahannock, Tennessee. Yeah.
Your grandmother's place?
2 miles from here. In this park area now.
Was that his hall school?
No.
No, it was up where your granddaddy used to live, up this road.
Up on Piney Run.
Maud and I were both born there.
You and Aunt Maud both were born when your granddad died on Piney Run. Well, when was your home established at Hall School?
Well, shortly after I was born, we lived over there before Bertie was born. She was born up at the Carla Fireplace, just above the coach place, up on the hill. And then on this, what's this stream name? At Hall Schoolhouse. But the family were born near Hall Schoolhouse.
Let's change the subject just a little bit now and talk about some of the things that were done in Rappahannock County in the vicinity of your home as a living. I understand, and I have vague recollections, that my grandfather, Henry L. Johnson, was a cabinet maker, also repaired harness, and I think of interest is the fact that he made coffins for various people throughout the community, and I believe made the coffin that he was buried in.
That's to me.
I wonder if you could tell me just a little bit about the process of coffin making, and did you ever have any part of it?
Yes, I used to. He had a shop right below our house, and where he worked them, and I used to go down and help him line the coffins. And when he'd make them, and when before he died, he said that he should have made his own coffin. But he had already gotten part of the lumber for it, but he said he should have made it, and he was very anxious to be buried in a coffin. He didn't want a casket. And he asked me to go down and see his hit. And asked her if she would have it made. But she didn't. I promised him that I would see to it, and I asked my oldest brother to see to it that he got one, and he did. Was buried in a coffin, but it wasn't one that he made.
What would be the difference between a coffin and a casket as we go into that?
Well, a coffin is more fitted to the person. It was narrow, it's wide through the shoulders and then tapered off down to the feet. It was narrow down to the feet, all the way down to the feet. It was more the shape of the person.
I think I heard, I may be wrong again as I was when I was thinking that Granddad was buried in the coffin that he made. I do well remember that he was buried in a coffin, and I thought that he was buried in the one he made, and I'm glad to set the record straight on that. But in my conversations, somewhere I have understood that when a person in the community here died, that when they came up the road, you could tell probably if there was someone in the family dead by the type of stick they carried.
They carried a stick in the hand, and when you saw them ride up on a horse, why, you knew just what their business was.
Well, how from this stick could you tell their business?
Well, it was an ordinary stick, but you knew that it was the way they carried it, for one thing. It, you could tell what it was.
Well,
then it had to cross the lap.
The fact that there was a certain length and notched at a certain point on the stick, did that have anything to do with it?
I don't know about that.
Is it true that, as I understand, the length of the stick represented the length of the person that was to be buried in that coffin, and the width where the notch was represented the widest part of that person?
Yes, I guess that was right, yes. He used to open the coffins at the graveside. He'd always open the cast coffins up. And the last one that he, well, I think it was the last one he ever made, was for Benton Armstrong, his wife. And she died. And when he went to open her up, he fainted. It was the last, he couldn't stand it. She was in awful condition. And I don't think he ever made another one after that. a cabinet maker.
So let's change the subject again to what the women folks around the house did. And I'd like to talk just a little bit about weaving and fancy work of that type. Do you know whether there was a loom in the Johnson family?
And my grandmother Johnson had one. I don't know what happened to it. I don't know what happened to it. But she used to weave rugs. That's what they wove, you know, was the rugs.
Could you tell me a little bit about how a loom was set up or anything about the process of weaving a rug?
Well, I really didn't see my grandmother doing it very much, but I was down to Ms. Hitch one day when she was a moving, when I went down there to see about my daddy's coffin. And she, it was just like a table she had. And it was, of course, she had this yarn or stuff, and she would just seem to weave it along in there, you know, for the rug. The best I can remember about it. When I was out in the backyard and was cracking walnuts, and she mashed her thumb, and she fainted. I could see it all in my mind. And my daddy said, well, it may be a good thing, maybe to teach these ladies how to sew. So I turned in and I finished that suit. Well, I've been sewing ever since.
This is the suit that your mother made for the family.
For one of the boys, yes. You're making the boys suits. Every winter she'd make one when I needed it. And she mashed the finger, and that's what he said, so I took it over from there. Well, until she got better, of course.
Do you ever recall any flax being raised in this mountain area?
No, I don't. I don't ever remember seeing any.
Did you ever see any wool carded?
Oh, yes. Oh, carded. No, I don't know if I ever saw any wool carding. No, I've seen it sheared, the sheep, and I've seen it while it was in that condition, but I never saw it carded.
Did you ever see anyone spin any wool on
no.
a spinning wheel?
No.
Did you, Aunt Betsy?
I remember seeing my mother carved wool, but I don't remember seeing anybody spin on the wheel.
What about the process of dyeing material? Do you recall getting any of the mountain herbs or walnuts, hulls, or anything of that type to dye material with?
My mother used to dye with black walnuts, hulls, dye made out of black walnuts.
Hey, Mammy, what I would like to do now is ask you a question to briefly trace your life as you remember it from the time you were a small girl, and if you remember it, your life at all on Piney River, and from there to Hull School, and I understand that you taught school for a while and had some experiences in square dancing in the holler here, and now live back in the same community. Could you briefly do that?
I was, when I was about 20 years old, my father sent me to Sparrowville to school one winter, and I only wanted me to teach school. I went to Sparrowville, and I went to Sparrowville one winter, and went to school to Ms. Ned Johnson, right?
Ned Johnson?
What was it? Susie Wood, she was. Susie Wood. Miss Annie Wood used to talk at Hall Schoolhouse for 18 years, and I went to school to her. And then after that, I took the examination, and I taught for 6 years. And a cousin of mine, Elizabeth Hutton, was also teaching here at Sycamore School, and she wanted to go to Lynchburg and take a business course, and she wanted me to go with her. And I went with her. I stopped teaching and went with her. And when we got there, we hadn't paid our tuition yet, but we spent the night. And she got homesick, began to cry, and said she didn't want to stay. So I come on back with her. We come back with her. And she taught in Fairfax County, and I stayed in Washington and went to school and took some of the higher studies that winter. And, well, before I went though down there, I taught at Hall Schoolhouse, I mean at Sycamore too. I taught at Hall Schoolhouse 3 years, I think, and down to Sycamore 3 years. And then I went to work in Washington. And I worked there, and then I was married there, which didn't lasted 5 years. And I was in Baltimore a while. And when my mother died, I came home to help wait on her when she was sick. And after I went back, I got a position with Mr. and Mrs. Andrews in Bethesda, Maryland. Mrs. Andrews was one of the DuPont family in Wilmington, Delaware. And I lived with them for 10 years and my job was called kind of a mother's helper. I didn't have anything special to do, I just worked. We spent one winter in Georgia, we spent 2 winters in South Carolina, and we'd spend most of our summers in New Orleans, Virginia. And then in 1930, I moved back up here where I was close to where I was raised, and I've been living there ever since. And I had my own home, had my brother built my house, my brother Lawrence Johnson built my house, sold me the property that it was on. And then a year ago I don't know what to say now. I don't know how to say.
Well, we've had some difficulty with the tape, and you wound up it's your living with Aunt Bessie at the present time. And now Aunt Bessie, they mainly started out her life at about 20 years old. I would like for you to tell us a little bit about your early life.
Well, I was born and raised close to her schoolhouse. All the schooling I got was at her school. I went as far as the 8th grade. And I stayed home and milked cows and helped with all the work there was to do around the place, such as drying apples, cracking walnuts, feeding pigs and chickens, so forth. And then when I was 25 years old, I married and moved down the road about 2 miles. We built our little home and moved there for till the park come along. The park didn't take our home, but it taking my mother-in-law's home. So we let her have hers, and I moved to Sycamore, and I'm still living there. And in my young life, I had to work, of course, at different jobs, but I never had a chance to do any traveling, but I had good times with my friends and neighbors. We used to go in the fall of the year with dry apples and gather up walnuts, crack those, do different things. Young folks would all get together for apple butter ballings. In the wintertime, we'd have dances in the community. We had big times. Everybody worked to help one another and come to make an apple butter and come in and help one another to peel the apples. Same way at hog killing time. Friends come in and help to put the meat up. So
As I said, at that time in my young days, there was plenty of chestnut trees around, and we picked up chestnuts, sold them, and sold the some of the dried apples, which was, we got about 5 cents a pound for chestnuts and also for the dried apples. But that was all the spending money we had in the end. And things were very different then from what they are now, but as I say, we had, everybody was neighbor to the other, to everybody else, and we did have a lot of fun along with the work.
Tell us a little bit about drying cherries.
Drying cherries? Well, we had to try the trees, of course. Most of them were too tall to kick off of the ground. We had to climb, tell them. And then we had to seed them by hand. We didn't have a machine to seed trees with. We had to do all that by hand. And then my brothers would skin off bark off of a tree, young tree, slats along the end of it to make dryers. That's what we spread our cherries on, put them out in the sun. And drying apples, we did the same way. Had to, sometimes we'd have a roof that we could spread the cherries out on. And taking away, apples. Usually if the sun was, weather was hot and the sun bright, why, it wouldn't take more than about 2 days to dry apples. But we didn't get much for those when we sold them either.
Thank you, Betsy. Anyway, you started off with your life at about 20 years old, and I know that as a younger girl, you were around over these hollows and hills, and I've heard you tell us something about your dancing parties. Tell us a little bit more about it now.
Well, when I was young, we used to always working around this place. There were three girls that was older, the oldest ones, before we had any boys, and the boys was too young to do much work, so we girls had to help our daddy out in the field, and he was planting corn. We dropped the corn and hoe it, hoe corn every day of the world, and he just go to the mountain and carry tan bark out and load that barn. We helped him with everything. And then when it would come Christmas time, he always hook up his wagon and fill it full of hay and take it. We had some neighbors, or three girls that were our age, and he'd take us around every night to parties and dances and different things. He was always a great dancer himself, and he would always, whenever he'd hear of a dance, he'd come in and say, "Ladies, you want to go to the dance tonight?" And we would get ready and go. Our mother never wanted us to go very much out at night, but he did, and he was a great dancer. First that I ever danced, I danced with my daddy. He said, "Come on, young girl, you never learn to be any younger." So he'd take us to dances, and when New Year's Day came, he'd say, "Well, now we have to go to work." So then after that, whenever we'd hear of a dance, he'd want to go. And one night they had a dance over in the other next hollow, Mr. Jim Hoof, and he wanted to go, and he asked me if I wanted to go. And I didn't tell him right out that I would go, and he said, "Well, if you won't go, I'll go down to schoolhouse and get Verlis, you'll go." So finally I went with him, and we rode horseback over there, and we danced from dark until daylight. We went by Mr. John Bowling. He ran a still house. And his son was going with me at the time. And of course, they took a little liquor along with them. They got over all the beds all night long from dark till daylight. Come back next day. I couldn't go to school because I was too sleepy. So then later on, he come in and asked if I wanted to go to the ball. And I said, I told him yes, so we went to get ready. And he didn't get ready. He went in the room and laid down on the couch. And I went in now and we got nearly ready. And I said, Potty, aren't you going? And he said, no. He said, the boy's old enough now to go with you and take care of your horses. He said, I'll kind of cut it out. So he didn't go to Nancy's anymore after that, but he always planned a way for us to go and let the boys go with us to take care of our horses, and we went just the same. He always did see to it that we went and had a good time.
I know that y'all didn't import an orchestra as we know it today for dances. Can you tell me a little bit about the music that you had at these dances?
We had some of the best fiddlers there was around. Newton Fraser was a good fiddler. And he would, sometimes we'd have Ari Arthur. He was a good fiddler, but he wasn't a very constant one. He'd get tired and he'd play a little while and then he'd stop. But Newton never stopped. We just had to stop the dancing for a while and give him time to rest his fingers. But he was, whenever we wanted a fiddler, we called on Newt. And he was just if we wanted to dance all night long, he played all night long.
I know this dancing then was a lot of fun, and Aunt Bessie, could you tell us a little bit now about quilt making?
Well, of course, in them days, we always made quilts, or we would piece the quilts and put them together, get them ready to put in the frame, and then we'd call in our neighbors or friends, and fix a big dinner, and they would sometimes maybe almost quilt a quilt in a whole day by helping one another. Like that, we got the job done, and
this has been a good session today, especially for me, and I don't believe I've identified myself yet. My full name is James R. Johnson. I mentioned earlier that I'm the son of Lawrence E. Johnson, and of course I know from the conversation here that you know that I've been talking to my two aunts, Romani and Aunt Betsy, and I would like to thank both of you for doing this tape with me. Also, I have my son here today. Young fella, how old are you?
Five.
Aren't you six?
I'm six.
And what's your name?
Jim.
What is your full name?
Jim Hartwell Johnson.
And have you been listening to this tape?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
Yeah.
Well, that's fine.